Good day, everyone. You're listening to Animal Voices on 89.5 FM CIUT. This is your Animal Rights Radio Show. I'd like to welcome Lamia Gibson again to the studio. Hello, Lamia.
Hello, Rod. How are you?
I want to first start off by congratulating you on this is your first day to stop smoking.
Again. For the 13th time.
Excellent. We wish you all the best.
13 might be my lucky number.
Yes, I think so it will.
Mm-hmm.
On today's show, we were going to speak with Dr. Douglas Graham, a raw foodist extraordinaire and advisor to world-class athletes. But we can't seem to get a hold of him, I think because he's in Florida, and parts of Florida are currently being evacuated due to Hurricane Rita. So I think that's what's happening. We had him on the show a few weeks ago to talk about raw foodism and veganism and athletics as well. And we had some technical difficulties that prevented him from being on the show for the whole hour. So we wanted to have him back to explore the concept a little bit more about raw foodism, because it can be kind of a big concept. So we're hopefully going to reschedule that for some time again soon. But today we're going to play a rerun, and I'll tell you which reruns we have to play, and you can call in and vote for which one you want to hear later on in the show. And lately I want to say that we haven't been doing the news too often at the top of the show, just because we want to get the guests in right away. We have a lot to talk about, and we want to get right to the meat of the matter. And I want to know, is that okay with you guys? Do you want to listen to the news for, 10 minutes at the start of the show? We're not quite sure what listeners would prefer. Do you want to prefer the guests right on 11, or do you like hearing what's happening in animal rights news around the globe? So, give us a call or email us at animalvoices@ciut.fm.
And the number to call for today is 416-946-7000.
Cool. Thanks, Lamia.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's if you want to hear the news. I mean, I love doing the news every day.
I like hearing the news.
I like doing it.
Yeah, I like it.
So if people out there have an opinion, please let us know. Also, I want to talk about Jack Layton. Earlier in the summer, I spoke with Jack Layton and his lovely wife, Olivia, and I asked him about the animal cruelty bill, that's been sitting in the Senate for God knows how long. And I was assured by him that, yes, he had the attention of the animal rights movement and people who care about animals in general, their welfare, and that he was going to do his best to push that bill. And he also said that he worked with Animal Alliance, and he shares their concerns. So I walked away from that feeling pretty good about myself that, yes, I'll vote NDP, and that's probably our best bet to get some power in the government to talk about animal welfare and environmentalism and whatnot. And then recently, last week actually, in the Toronto Star, there was an interview with Jack Layton, and the reporter started off the interview by saying, Jack Layton is sitting on the patio of Bodega Restaurant on Baldwin Street in Toronto, spreading foie gras on toast, and it seems trying out portions of his stump speech. So, of course, that kind of struck me as odd. He's spreading foie gras on toast.
That's awful.
Yes. And not that, it wouldn't be less awful if he was, eating veal or beef or pigs or chickens, whatever. But, foie gras is kind of a sensitive issue right now because, of course, it's being banned in several parts of the world.
And a lot of people are getting into the know about it, too. You would think
yes.
He had heard.
I think anyone who hears about the process of how foie gras is actually made, it's pretty obvious that can't. It can't continue. The practice can no longer be condoned.
And for listeners who don't know, there's a process of shoving a steel pipe down the animal's neck and force-feeding it, I think.
Yeah.
Until its liver gets enlarged.
It's a three-foot tube that's shoved down the duck's or the goose's throat and pumps several pounds of corn mash into his or her belly each day until the liver becomes, quite engorged, and that the liver becomes diseased and it becomes a fatty liver. It's called hepatic lipidosis, and that is what's served as a delicacy in some of the finer restaurants. And there's currently a ban going on in California set to take place in 2012 about the production and the sale of foie gras. And it's been banned in several countries around the world. And if anyone wants more information on that, please visit us at www.animalvoices.ca. And we've got a couple shows about foie gras. Just do a search on our site and you can find that to learn more. So anyway, Jack Layton is eating foie gras. And I thought, well, if he's working with Animal Alliance, and if he's talking to the animal rights movement and he has our attention, then why is he eating foie gras? So I emailed the NDP and I said, is this true? Is this really true? I didn't want to, you know, create havoc and start spreading rumors and something that might have been a misprint. So far, I have not heard back from the NDP. I sent a very diplomatic letter. Like Lauren, I'm the king of diplomacy. And so I'm wondering, maybe he just needs to be educated about foie gras. So I urge everyone out there to please email the NDP. Go to ndp.ca. There are several contacts there for him. And say, Jack, you know, if you want our vote, you have to stop doing, you know, obviously insane things like eating foie gras. Especially when so many of us are working so hard to end the practice. And then it caught me wondering. I thought, well, you know what? A lot of people in the animal rights movement were kind of torn between voting for the NDP and the Green Party. In Canada, I'm talking specifically about Canada. In the States, you can argue about voting for Ralph Nader or the Democrats, and that's a whole bigger pile. In Canada, I think we have it a little bit better. We've got more choices, and the third choice is a little bit more viable, the NDP. Some people think voting for the NDP, though, is sort of like voting for the Liberals. You know, they're not going to get us that much further. You know, they talk environmentalism and without a mention, really, of animal rights or animal welfare. But people think if we vote NDP in there, that will at least get the government shifting more left and that they'll at least be more open to dialoguing with us and talking to us. Then there's the other group of animal rights people who think, no, we should vote for the Green Party because the Green Party actually talk about animal welfare policies and they're talking about factory farms and implementing, I think, like penalties, I believe, on factory farms that emit a great amount of pollution. Of course, then some people say the Green Party is simply a conservative party masked in a few left-wing values, but are all for privatization and share many of the conservative policies. So we're quite divided in the animal rights movement as to what to do in Canada in terms of trying to influence the government to listen to us and hear us. And I think now is the time to sort of start to come together and talk about, can we do something together? Can we work together to actually, produce a movement and talk to either the Green Party or the NDP? Because there's going to be a spring election, you know, no doubt about it. And while they're all, you know, ramping up and having their committee meetings about what their campaign is going to look like, now is the time to really put pressure on these people and say, hey, we are a very big movement. We're a very big, passionate movement. And working together and putting our voices together can be a very powerful thing. And if you listen to us, we will do our best to make sure that you are elected. So what do we do? Can we work together? I mean, we're so divided on many other things. You know, a woman came up to me at the Toronto Vegetarian Fair, and she said, you know what? You all are so divided. You all have your little sects, but you're all talking about the same thing. Wouldn't it be more powerful if you all came together and shared your resources and had one big voice? And I'm like, sister, I am there with you. You know, that's what we tried to do on the show. We tried to, you know, link people together and get different movements to hear how we are all, in fact, linked and share the same views. So can we, is it possible if we can come together and talk about what we're going to do in the election? Is politics too dirty an issue for us to come together and talk about? I'd love it if you could share your views with us. You can give us a call today if you want, 416. What's our number, Lamia?
416-946-7000.
And if you're out of the Toronto area and you have to dial long distance, you can give us a call and we'll give us your number and we'll call you right back. That's the best we can do. It's community radio. Our toll-free line doesn't go up until the fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to know. Can we do this? Is that possible? Or give us an email at animalvoices@ciut.fm, and I'd love to talk about this issue more and have representatives from the Green Party and the NDP.
Or to bring in another idea, too, do we spend the effort to work with the NDP and the Green Party, or do we step aside from the political structure? I mean, not that we can step out of it, because we live here in Canada, but do we step out of it enough to just talk to the people, too, as another idea?
That was my...
And put our efforts into that realm. Because although we have three options here in Canada, potentially four with the Green Party, it's only four. You know what I mean? And there's a lot more people out there and a lot more to be done and a lot more thought and opinion, I think, could be shared in creating worlds and communities that are sustainable and moral, ethical.
Yeah, and you know, and that was my third option to give people to talk to us about. I mean, you know, should we trust the political organization to listen to us and try to influence the masses, or do we need to really concentrate more on building up the grassroots movement and getting out there ourselves onto the streets and talking to the people and making the change ourselves
and being the party that we want to see?
Yeah, and that's kind
I
of
mean,
what happened.
For lack of a better word, because from personally, I don't know if I'd join a party.
Yeah, sure.
Other than a fun party.
But no, definitely, and that's how revolution happens, right? We got to do it ourselves, you know. And there's a lot of people out there, a lot of animal rights, young especially animal rights activists, who want to work in the animal rights movement and get paid for it. They want to get a job in the animal rights movement and make a living out
of it. That's new to me.
You know, and it's not new to a lot of younger activists, honest to God. And I have to say, that's not the way to go about making this change.
Yeah. But the thing is, this world, we have to work to live and pay rent and la, la, la. Mm-hmm, so I can see how people are like, I want to do something I believe in and feel passionate about and have that support me and put my vegan food on my table, etc.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that in order to, I think, to make that revolution happen, we need to put those dollars elsewhere than into our own pockets. Anyway, That's
food for thought.
That's my food for thought for the day on Jack Layton. At the very least, please visit ndp.ca, contact Jack Layton, and say, were you eating foie gras? And if so, please end it.
Mm-hmm.
And you visit www.gourmetcruelty.com for more info, or our site, animalvoices.ca.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Lum.
When you first started talking, we had a caller call in and said, news, please.
News, please.
One vote for news, please.
One vote for news. Okay. Well, that's two then. You and the caller.
Yeah.
Anybody else? We're at 416-946-7000 if you want to call and give us your opinion on news, Jack Layton, or anything else if you want. But we're going to play a rerun, and we've got a few reruns that we could play. I brought in a few today. One is consistently in our top 10 list of downloaded shows. It's on Joel Fuhrman, Dr. Joel Fuhrman. He was on the show talking about soy and processed foods and investing in your health. He's definitely a nutritionist. And he talked about investing in your health in a way that I think was really interesting. You know, people talk about, oh, it's too expensive to eat healthy. And he said, well, it may be more expensive to buy a nice house that's not going to fall down in 20 years. We invest in something so that it will last longer. Same thing with the house. You have to do the same thing with your body. Invest in your body, invest in your health, and you will last longer. And he's kind of a no-holds-barred kind of nutritionist. Not that he's pushy, but, you know, he makes no apologies for, I guess, being right or thinking that he's right. And he's really an excellent speaker. Anyway, so that's Joel Fuhrman, and he's the author of Eat to Live, a great book. We also have Rita Laws talking about Native Americans and vegetarianism. Great interview that Lauren did with her. Rita Laws is Cherokee and Choctaw, and she talks about hunting and colonialism. Really great show that Lauren did. We also have Dr. Lester Friedlander, former meat packer and veterinarian for the USDA, and he came out and spoke out against the USDA and their practices about what's happening in the slaughterhouses and the meat packing plants and who is responsible for spreading mad cow, unleashing mad cow on North America. He's a great guy, really no-nonsense kind of guy to listen to. And we also have Ravi Chand, U.S. vegan marine, talking about how he convinced six other marines to become vegetarian and another one to become vegan. And he also talked about his time in Iraq and what war was like and seeing that kind of carnage and linking that to the kinds of views that we can express in the animal rights movement. Lastly, we have our top downloaded show of all time, the Gary Francione interview that Lauren did with him back in 2002. He's the author of Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog, and he's quite a fascinating individual to listen to as well. So we've got those shows, and if you want, you can call in and let us know what you'd like to hear, or if you don't call in, we're just going to play whatever we want.
We had a caller who was new to listening to the show, brought into CIUT, again, it sounds, by Toronto Unlocked.
Cool.
And she had a couple things to say. She says it's a no-brainer about the news, since we are one of the few places where you can hear animal rights news. So another vote for the news.
Cool.
News, please.
Excellent.
And with Jack Layton, she said not to judge him too harshly, and hopefully that education first will help him be liberated from the foie gras.
Yes.
And she feels he honestly tries to do a good job.
Cool.
Yeah.
He should have brought her on the air. I would have loved to.
She didn't want to be on the air.
She didn't want to be on the air.
Which is everybody's right to be.
Well, I'm happy that she called in and gave us her view. Yes, mm-hmm. It's true. I'm not trying to judge Jack too harshly. I think he's a great guy. I think he's giving some credibility. He's the only credible kind of person, mm-hmm. I think, in the government right now. Although Paul's been doing some great things, too, lately. But Jack has a pretty solid track record.
I think they're all a bunch of shit characters myself. I don't know.
But so it's true. Maybe he just needs to be educated. I'm not coming down on Jack Layton.
And she wasn't coming down on you. She
cool.
was very nice.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks for that call. So we're going to go to some music, and we're either going to talk to you people after the break, if you want to call in and talk back to us, or we'll go to one of our great reruns, Gary Francione, Lester Friedlander, Rita Laws, Joel Fuhrman, or Ravi Chand. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT. Can I say one more thing? I want to say one more thing before we go to break.
Go for
because you brought up Toronto Unlocked. Lauren and I were interviewed on Toronto Unlocked recently with Andy Berry, and it was a very quick interview, and I wanted to say something that I didn't get a chance to say. Andy was asking us if we felt that we were given the right to express an opinion on this show, as, of course, they are not allowed to do so on CBC. And it's true, while we try to foster an environment where all voices can come together and express an opinion, feel free to express their own opinion, and try not to be biased on this show, I do feel really grateful to CIUT that we are allowed to come on here and express an opinion. I mean, if you listen to the show, our opinion definitely will come out loud and clear for sure. And I just wanted to say thanks to CIUT for that freedom and for the freedom to produce the shows we want, to tell the stories we want, and to feature the kinds of views that you would not hear on mainstream radio. We're very, very grateful to CIUT. We could not do this kind of show, I don't think, anywhere else in this city and get the kinds of promotion and support we do from CIUT. So I'm very happy about that.
We have a gentleman on the phone who would like to make a comment about Jack Layton that I think is very interesting. Can you hear us, sir?
Yes.
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, my name's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
That's good.
What's your comment?
It was basically, there were some comments made about what a good guy Jack Layton is. And it's my understanding that during the last election, his campaign manager, while they were campaigning in Newfoundland, was called on the carpet by some Newfoundlanders in regards to the fact that he used to work for the IAFW and protest the seal hunt.
Right.
And Jack Layton's response to that was to fire him. I think you can check up on that, and most people knew about that at the time.
Damn. So, I did not hear that.
Given the fact that Jack Layton really wasn't going to get any votes in Newfoundland to begin with, it seems an extraordinary, very drastic move. You know,
that's
to
terrible.
Fire the guy who got you elected.
Yeah, that's terrible. Do all these politicians, all they want to do is just sort of do what they think they can get the most votes at any given time?
I think that's the unfortunate thing about our structure, is that, I mean, anybody who runs as a politician who wants to get in, they really have to not buy a vote, but really make people happy.
You're absolutely correct, because mm-hmm. what they need to do, if you want to have any chance to get this world out of the spiral dive that we're now in, our death throes, so to speak, that's what you have to do. You have to change the political structure so that there's some overseeing body that stays
that
there while
the
politicians
too.
Come in and out, and it's not a revolving
and
door, 3-4 year thing. Because those are short-term policies, and that's why we're in this mess.
Paul, I'm so glad that you called in and told us that. I'm definitely going to check that out, and I wish everyone could write to NDP and ask if that really is true mm-hmm. and if that really happened, because that's, you know, that's terrible. And again,
can I make a request?
Please.
This isn't what to do with Jack Layton. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Is Carl there?
Carl is not here.
No.
Do you want to talk to Carl sometime?
He has a CD with some vegan songs on it that
yes.
I wrote.
Okay.
And I gave them to at the veg fair.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping maybe he would play one of them. And because they do speak about directly about animal cruelty issues. There's no beating around the bush.
Yeah, Carl, I don't think he's been in the studio since the Veg Fair. I know he's been pretty busy with school, but I think when he comes in next time, he'll bring your CD and definitely play one of your tracks.
All right.
Great.
No, not for myself, but I think people might, you know, might be illuminating and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks for calling in, Paul.
Yeah, and in terms of the shows that you're having,
yeah.
The guy about the soy, he's going to be talking about how processed soy is perhaps not as healthy as people think.
Right, yes. That's your vote?
Well, I wouldn't mind knowing what he has to say about that, actually.
Okay.
I don't eat soy myself, but
great.
People ask me about it.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Bye.
Cool.
It's great when people call in, huh?
It is really great. We like it.
If you have any more comments, please give us a call. Please give us a call, 416-946-7000. If people keep calling in, we won't be able to play this show from Dr. Joel Fuhrman. So far, we have one vote for Dr. Fuhrman. Again, he talked about soy and processed foods and how, you know, perhaps they're not the healthiest thing that we vegans should be eating. A lot of people think mainly they're good for transition, as a transition food for when you learn more about veganism, then you can sort of weed those out as well as you become more informed about proper nutrition.
Another interesting comment from a caller. Hello, caller.
Yes, hello. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hi.
Good,
what's your name?
Well, my name is Greg.
Hi, Greg. What's your comment?
My comment is that we shouldn't just stop at Jack Layton or the NDP. Why not try to advance the agenda with all the political leaders and all the parties and get it on the radar screens for all of them, because that's a PR issue. It behooves them to address these matters, and if they think they can get some political currency out of it, they'll run with the ball.
Do you think that the Liberals and the Conservatives will realistically pay heed to those kinds of concerns?
If it becomes something that they feel that enough people are behind that it makes a difference, then they have no choice, correct? Because that's the way they operate, is based on strategies.
So you're suggesting we play their own game of numbers against them, essentially?
Why not? Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a great comment, Greg, and it's true. If we're sending a letter to the NDP, we could exactly send the same letter to all the four parties and say the same thing. And as you said, get it out on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Great. Thanks for your call, Greg.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Again, another interesting vote.
Every time I hang up the phone, it lights up again.
It lights up again.
But well, it's not going right now.
At least it proves that we do have some listeners. We actually have a lot of listeners now, actually, that that we've been online for the past a year and a half. If you want any more information on our show, please visit www.animalvoices.ca. We've got over 100 shows there available for download free of charge. And we could not do that without your support and your fundraising dollars as well. Thanks again to everyone who came out to the Toronto Vegetarian Food Fair and donated to our booth and to our show. I want to make a note that those dollars go towards our advertising, our global advertising, while when you donate to our CIUT biannual fundraisers, you vote for a place to keep us on the air and to keep our voice loud and clear. We do spend quite a lot in long distance. I averaged it out. We spend about $1,000 in long distance.
A year.
Mm. And that's why I say we could not do this show anywhere else than on CIUT.
We have another caller on the air. Hello, caller.
Hi.
Hi, caller. What's your name?
Carl.
Hi, Carl.
Yeah.
Is this the Carl?
No, it's not.
Okay. Sorry, Carl.
Are the Carl.
You are the Carl.
You're still special.
Wait, what's your comment?
Actually, I like what the caller just called and said about basically how to use the numbers game against the politician.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, that's all it's about. It's all about the numbers. And I find that everything that Animal Voices covers and talks about and works with is something that in many ways has power, right? And it's the power that if more people became conscious of it, they would realize that it really is something that helps. Like, it's not just like a goodwill type of thing. It's more or less, there's real power in it. It's almost as if to say how yoga is so popular now because it's not just an activity to keep people preoccupied. There really is power in it. And that's what draws people to it. That's what keeps people stuck in it.
Nice.
Keeps people with it, right? And the more people who try it, the more people who realize it really is not just useful. You know what I mean? Because when we talk about usefulness all day, and people will ignore it because they're more interested in the gratification and interested in, I guess, the quick fix. But everything that you cover, I noticed. Like, I love your show. It's actually one of my favorite shows on the radio, period. Right?
Well done, Carl.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
And I'm not saying that because, like, it's true. And I find that I get so much information from it that I find it really is power. And in this society, it's all everything from politics to economics. It's all about power. And in the end, I think people are really attracted and move with the power, but it has to. I think it has to be presented to them in a way that they see what's in it for them first. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to politics, these politicians have been playing this game forever with the voters, where they jump on an issue because they know it's a hot issue. And then as soon as they get it in, they basically say, okay, well, let's now jump on their original agenda, which basically is money-making. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think for the whole movement to use the concept of what we're really working with is power and use it to our advantage and use it with the numbers, use the numbers game from every angle and always make sure that when it all comes down to it, what is realized is that we're all about empowering people and it's all about the numbers behind that empowerment also.
Because what gets the numbers is the actual true power behind it all.
Exactly.
You're trying to say, yeah, yeah.
And the true power does come true. It's not like you know, some
No, it's real.
Some things are, you know, shaky, right?
Yeah.
And they might come off like they have a lot of benefits. But when you see through them, you realize, oh, who are you kidding? But I've come to realize, and I've been, like, paying attention to your show for a while. And as a matter of fact, your show is what basically brought me to open my eyes to understand, like, the connection between so many things.
Carl, yeah. You're giving me goosebumps here.
Excellent.
Well, it's a fact. And I really do thank you, because you're doing a, like, I can't even comment on what type of job you're doing, because it's that good. It really is.
I'm so glad you called in today, Carl, and told us that. It's difficult on radio to know if we're touching people and if we are actually spreading the kind of power that we hope to be spreading.
Oh, no doubt. Like, right. I'm sure when people listen to the show, they listen and they actually, like, I actually look forward to your show. It's like, there's not very many shows, whether TV, radio, that have that type of power where you're saying to yourself, I really want to know what you're going to talk about next. I really want to, because it really is informative.
Great. So, and to get back to your original opinion, so playing the numbers game, if we make it an election issue, they will make it an election issue.
Oh, no doubt.
Great.
Nice. You wanted to say about what show you wanted to hear?
Oh, right. Show. Yeah. The Native and Vegetarianism.
Okay, Rita Law is talking about Native Americans and vegetarianism. Okay, great. Thanks for your vote.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye. Rob?
Yes, Lamia?
I hate to cut you off, but we got to go to an ad.
We got to go to an ad. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Currently, we're taking calls from people who want to express an opinion on what to do about joining our voices and making a difference in the government for the upcoming election, or how we can at least spread this power, this movement, on our own. You're listening to Animal Voices on 89.5 CIUT. Welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today we're talking about a few things. I started off the show talking about Jack Layton and how he was eating foie gras at a restaurant on Baldwin Street. That's Bodega Restaurant, if you want to protest. And we had some great calls and insight from people.
We also had a caller, sorry to interrupt you, Rob, while the music was playing.
Yeah, what was her view?
She said she liked the idea of targeting all the politicians and all the political parties that that lovely Carl was talking about. And she also said and encouraged us to try and get Jack Layton on the air, to talk to him face to face.
Hey, I'll give it my best shot. I'd love to have Jack and Olivia in the studio.
Yeah.
I think they would do it. They're very community-minded.
I would hope they would.
Why not?
If they have the time.
And we're also about to play one of our reruns. We asked for people's votes on which rerun we should play. And it goes to Rita Laws.
Woohoo!
talking about Native Americans and vegetarianism. And it was a great interview that Lauren did, I guess, last year. We're only going to play part one because we're almost out of time. For the full show, please visit us at www.animalvoices.ca to download the entire show and a whole host of other ones. There's a couple of people wanted to hear the Joel Fuhrman one. He's on there, too, so feel free to go and download free of charge. And I want to really thank the people who called in today, not only for their opinions on what we were talking about, but also for their comments on the show.
We have 5 callers.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great.
And just sharing their love for Animal Voices and what we do on the show. And we hope to be spreading that power a lot more as the weeks go by.
Yeah.
Here is Lauren Corman talking with Rita Laws on Native Americans and Vegetarianism on CIUT 89.5 FM.
We are delighted and very honored to have Dr. Laws join us today. Dr. Laws has been vegetarian since 1979, and in 1974 she witnessed the slaughter of a lamb in front of a mother sheep, and the experience strongly influenced her choice to become vegetarian. At the same time, she also learned about the tens of thousands of kids in foster care who are awaiting permanency, and she became a special needs adoption activist. She's written several books and articles about domestic adoption and children with special needs. She is currently revising a book she wrote last year about Indian peace medals, which signify lasting friendship and peace. We're going to be speaking specifically about an article she wrote called Returning to the Corn. So, Dr. Laws, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm really curious just to hear about what brought you to writing the article Returning to the Corn. Can you tell us a little bit about writing that article?
Oh, I'd be happy to. I live in a rural area of central Oklahoma, outside the boundaries of the Choctaw Nation, which is in the southeastern part of the state. And in an effort to remain more connected to the activities of my tribe, I began writing articles for the tribal newspaper. And one of the series of articles that I did was a group of children's stories based on various Choctaw legends and myths, and started reading and learning more about how corn has played a crucial role. And during some of my research, I was really surprised to find that my tribe had been vegetarian before the Europeans arrived, and that really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
because I, other than myself, I didn't know anybody in my tribe who was a vegetarian, and so that spurred me to go looking for more information in this article result.
And you ended up publishing that article in the newspaper?
The article has appeared in the tribal paper, but it was originally written for the Vegetarian Journal. It appeared in September 1994, originally.
And you were surprised by some of the information that you were learning about. I was definitely really surprised by some of the things in this article. It's really fantastic article, and it's a really clear article, too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was curious to hear more about how people have responded to this article. How did the tribal newspaper, what was the response from the article there?
Well, it was really interesting because, you know, I live in a state that depends very heavily on the cattle industry. So I was a little concerned, you know, that the tribe may not want to print the article.
Yeah.
But the editor was wonderful. She said, Rita, this is very factual, and it's very true, and it's very interesting, and I have no problem whatsoever. And the letter's response was very positive. People thanked me for reminding them that we need to return to the corn, to make corn part of our diet, to remain healthy. I think everybody should know what their ancestral food is and should be familiar with that and have it in their diet. Somebody told me once that the oldest Irish food staple is barley.
Mm.
And if you're Irish, you should have barley in your diet if you want to be healthy. Well, I believe if you're Choctaw or Native American, you should have corn in your diet. But it was writing, it was like peeling the layers of an onion. It was an interesting experience, and the readers have had the same sort of experience reading it. It's when I discovered I wanted to find out how we could go from being almost completely vegetarian to being almost completely carnivorous in such a short period of time. And, you know, found that there was very definite series of events that caused that, starting with the introduction of European meat-eating customs, followed by the introduction of the horse and the gun, and then the proliferation of alcoholic beverages and white traders. All these things, one upon the other, created this move away from the corn.
Rita, can you tell us about your research into how your tribe was vegetarian and what surprised you the most from your research?
Yes. Like I said, I don't live in the nation, so I don't eat as closely to the original diet as many Tatars. But I was surprised to find that we really used relatively few of the, as a people, relatively few of the old foods. Corn is still central in our culture. We have the big corn dance every fall, and any collection of Tsotsa recipes is going to have 100 recipes that involve corn or maize or hominy. But there's other things that we've sort of lost, like I kept finding references to acorn bread made with flour made from acorns. I have never seen a recipe for that. I've never tasted that. And yet it was a crucial food, and it sort of breaks my heart that we've lost so much of that, you know. One of these days when I have more time, I'm going to try to see if I can't find a lot of these old recipes.
The Native Americans in the Oklahoma region, you point out in the article, were traditionally agriculturalists, that they had been doing that for a long time. And I thought that it was really interesting that you point out that a lot of so-called wild foods that the Europeans were discovering, so-called discovering, were actually being cultivated for many years beforehand by the Native peoples there.
Yes, Oklahoma is referred to as part of the nation's breadbasket because we grow so much wheat and a lot of other really important grains and nuts. We have the best pecans in the world. But we were this way long before Europeans arrived. This is such an excellent area for growing food that the Indians considered it a breadbasket as well. And tribes that lived on all sides of Oklahoma would come into Oklahoma, cultivate a lot of their fruits and grains and vegetables, and then come back and harvest them. And it was, you know, there were no fences. There were no property of signs.
Yeah.
Everybody just knew this area is being cultivated by this family or this tribe or this clan. And everybody was very polite about that. And then the Europeans came and didn't realize these were carefully cultivated and shared resources and just thought, you know, it was some sort of Garden of Eden that they could just plunder.
Yeah. Can you tell us about the Trail of Tears and what happened there?
Yes, well, starting around the 1830s, the traditional lands, the Tsotsa people, which is in present-day Mississippi, were so coveted by the whites that they decided just they couldn't negotiate the Tsotsas off the land, so they forcibly removed the tribe to Oklahoma, literally walking them the path from Mississippi to Oklahoma. And there were several of these. It wasn't just one large group. There were several large groups beginning in the 1830s. And several of these marches occurred over the winter months, and the Tsotsas were forced to leave so quickly that they didn't even have time to prepare. In fact, they spent more time gathering up the bones of their ancestors to take with them than they did preparing for the journey itself, and a lot of them were even barefoot, walking through snow. So there was a terrible amount of suffering and death along the path. That's why it's called the Trail of Tears, because so many people never made it here alive. On the way, a small group broke off and escaped from the soldiers who were accompanying the march and went to Louisiana and hid. And now there is a Louisiana band of Tsotsas. They probably are the closest as far as retaining the original culture. A lot of the Louisiana Tsotsas don't even speak English. They speak only Tsotsa. And then a small group also escaped before the march began and hid in the forests of Mississippi. and the swamplands near the coast, and then they came out, sort of came out of hiding later, and they are today the Mississippi band at the Choctaw. So we're basically now in three groups, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Mississippi.
You point out as well in the article, Returning to the Corn, you talk about how the more meat-centered or more meat-based tribes were colonized, I don't know if the word more severely, if the words more severely were, but they lost more than some of the more agricultural-based, vegetarian-based tribes. Can you talk about the differences between the colonization process with those different groups?
Yes, it's really tragic. It's not a vegetarian metaphor, but there's a metaphor that warns people not to put all their eggs in one basket.
Right.
And this is the tragedy that befell a lot of the tribes that abandoned the corn and went after the sort of short-term gains of an animal-based or nomadic existence as opposed to a staying-put agricultural existence. People like George Catlin predicted dire consequences for these groups many, many years before this took place, but it was tragic because what they did was they lost their cultural base. They lost their sort of their security blanket. And then when the buffalo disappeared, they had nothing to fall back on, and they were starving. A lot of people don't understand this, but the tribes did not understand the concept of extinction. You see, they had people in every tribe who had the ability, the psychic ability, if you would, to know when a herd was coming. And they relied on them to say, a herd is coming, get ready. Then they would go out and they would take some buffalo. When the major herds were wiped out, they didn't understand they weren't coming back. They always believed that the Great Spirit just simply put a herd there over the next hill, that it just appeared. And then the buffalo finder would say, the herd is coming, and they would go out. And so when the herds didn't come back, they didn't understand it was because there were no buffalo left. They thought the Great Spirit just simply put a herd there over the next hill, that it just appeared. And then the buffalo finder would say, the herd is coming, and they would go out. And so when the herds didn't come back, they didn't understand it was because there were no buffalo left. They thought the Great Spirit just simply wasn't putting the herds there magically for them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they began to pray. They prayed this ghost dance, which a lot of whites were really scared of. They thought it was some kind of voodoo or something, but it was a prayer is all it was. And they believed that if they kept praying, they kept dancing the ghost dance, that these herds would magically reappear again. And they did this. These buffalo-dependent tribes danced the ghost dance to exhaustion for decades, for generations. And it wasn't until after 1900 that they began to understand that the buffalo were not returning.
On that note, we're going to take a short break, and I'd like to come back and hear more about the buffalo as lifestyle phenomenon, which you attribute to the result of European influence.
Hi, you've been listening to Animal Voices at CIUT 89.5. This is Lamia, your friendly neighborhood Animal Voices technician. You were just listening to an excerpt from an interview that happened with Rita Laws. If you want to listen to the whole interview or that whole show from that day, you can visit our website at www.animalvoices.ca. I want to say again, Rob's left, he's off on his way, but I want to say again, thank you so much to all the listeners who called in. Thank you for the positive words, thank you for the insightful opinions, and thank you for asking to listen to Rita Laws, because she's fabulous. See you next week.